using it. Never mind.
Oh, this. Yeah. Well, I can use a table maybe for this.
We've got, there's a music stand here. Right here that you can use for the projector, maybe.
Alright, son. I want to tell you something. This elf, he done over here danced on that record button just right now. Bam! I think this is getting weird, so what? Elf had to catch a slice. You want some pie, son? You want some pie on Tuesday night? Yeah, you know if you don't get... You know, if you don't do, you better spell that stuff correctly. You better spell correctly.
I'll keep spelling.
Yeah,
I can.
You're gonna label your headphones? You about to label your headphones? You know where your head's at? What's this music about? It's so rockety rock.
Can you hear it out there okay? Yeah. The multitudes of people that are walking in here. Okay. I'm going to put this down.
Welcome to Wake the Farm Up, Maintaining Ground Podcast. Support the show. Hit the subscribe button. Follow our social media. Come to a live show. We get into it in Southern Indiana in this episode, season 4, episode 18. What? It's a poetic potion mix with Drea Starr, Dula Convos, woven with the elf dad, George Javy, the weather guy. Can I get a climate report, Dad? Come on, I need to know what's going on. Like, okay, what? Also, there's some comedy relief with the conversations of Mother Mitty and Mitty Boss Joe. Hope you enjoy the show. It's wonderful, beginning to end. Or feel free to jump around in the show notes. I'd like to thank Tom and the Dillsboro Arts Guild for hosting us and helping us record. Here we go. Wake the farm up. Have fun, y'all. Enjoy.
Wake the farm up.
Let's make art happen.
All right, everybody. Let's welcome Drea Starr. What up? Yeah, we're recording.
Or how it's going to be perceived, or, you know, there's dozens of questions that could come up, and then someone, yourself or others, start to put boundaries around it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's really, well, like you were saying with people that you can have really cool conversations, and then as soon as they know they're being recorded, it's like, oh, okay, I have to make myself sound smart, make sure I know what I'm saying, and, you know, all the things, so.
Yeah, so maybe there's even this, like, you know, there is this feeling, I guess I've felt that, you know, where people get concerned that I'm recording them. But maybe there's almost like a level up in the conversation when somebody think like, there's almost like a lot, like you said, you know, like you want to like start thinking of more intelligent things to say, like when you're recording or something, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't have to do that, I guess. Cause I know like that gets like, I think that naturally gets mixed in what people are saying when they're just being themselves, you know?
Yeah. It does. But you see that, and not everybody does, and not everybody's experienced it like you have also. You know, I think that the more you put yourself out there and begin to speak with your authentic voice, you start to have that innate sense of like, I can just be myself because myself is enough. And I have a lot of cool things to say. And I also have a lot of really dumb shit and mundane things to say mixed in all of that. And that's all good, you know?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you don't have a lot of practice doing that, that can be a really scary and vulnerable thing to try to start doing, you know?
Right.
So I know that's been my experience for sure. Just being back in school as a 30-year-old and having to use technology in a way that I wasn't used to doing, and being on, you know, recorded conversations for the school and all of these things. It was just, at first I was shocked at how uncomfortable I was. And it was silly because it's not like thousands of people are going to see it, but it was still recorded and it was my voice out there, you know, with people that I didn't know.
Yeah.
So it took me a minute to relax into that and trust myself and to be really gracious with myself and to try to find my authenticity through that.
Mm, I love your authenticity. I mean, just like the vocabulary of poetry that you just flowed with right there is just so much of, you know, I get images, like I think in images a lot. I know sometimes I can get myself to thinking with, like, you know, like I'm hearing things and there's like letters, like I'm reading a book or something, you know, inside my head. But most of the time it's like colors and images and, you know, different vocabulary tones and the animal, it's the animalistic sound of another human creature that's like sharing sounds. And we're at this like level of sharing sounds where these words can create things and images and colors into us from how we've either A, experienced those words, like use the word gracious, like just like how it came out was just like gracious itself. Like it, like, I mean, you could say the word in a not so, I don't know. Let's try to say that word in a not gracious way. Gracious. I mean, even like trying to say it rough, it kind of almost sounds like there's some grace into it, you know, in like a funny troll way or something. Like, gracious.
I think of my grandma saying, good gracious.
Good gracious.
You know, like that's like the, it's like the most negative way I could possibly say. And even that has, it emotes a feeling, you know, it emotes like a sense of forgiveness, which is what the word means. And so, yeah, I get what you're saying for sure. I love that. And I love how if you can be gracious with yourself and forgiving and flow with that, then you do find your true voice. And that's, there's a lot of power in that in your everyday life. A lot of us don't get to tap into. So
yeah.
How can we
make it more, like, should we make an app, you know, for people to be able to tap into it? But like, you download the app and it's like an app that you don't download on your phone. It's just like one that you like pull in from like a cloud, literally like outside, you know, you just like hold your hand up and like, you know, like create your own little connection there. Flow.
It's like, it reminds me, what you're saying reminds me of Qigong, like how they describe the thread that's connected to you and the outer universe or whatever it is. It's like the Qigong highway or something. I think that so many of us feel like we have to have something important to say also, which is kind of annoying.
That's important.
Yeah. Everything's important. Everything that you say is important, even if it means nothing, you know? And I think that that's where the concept for me of, non-attachment and trying to, you know, break those attachments that I have to my egoic persona that I'm attached, that we all have, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that when you start to bring that to your conscious awareness and see how silly it is that that keeps you from just being in the flow of conversation or arriving in a space with confidence and ability. It's kind of funny how that keeps us from being our fullest self, even though like that's what it feels like you're protecting something important, but really you're just keeping yourself from being in the moment with whatever's happening.
The present. Yeah. Breathing in, like you get stuck in some pattern or something like that, that, you know, you behave out of a pattern from, you know, the past and how the world around you has trained you almost like a dog. Like, you know, if like a dog is trained, you know, that every time they see a bone, they're supposed to jump up and spin around in a circle. That's like what they do when they see a bone or something, you know? It's, you know, like we can detrain ourselves from our trainers if we're not feeling that comfortable about it. And we can, you know, we're human creatures that can really get into this flow with the ecosystem to liberate ourselves. And that's a big feeling, you know, when you get into the flow and you're, it's like a liberation. in a certain sense, mm-hmm. because you're like, you have this autonomy of being in your autonomous flow, but it's also a unification because you are connecting into something bigger than yourself. And it's, you know, right. you know, it's way more than your little ego autonomous self. But you know, part of our wiring is to have some ego that protects and takes care of yourself. And the ecosystem mm-hmm. is kind of like, you know, set you up to be like that. It doesn't, you know,
for sure.
And that, you know, that can be maybe perhaps where, you know, things like greed can kind of creep in, where it's like, I really want to take care of myself really, really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to have my own ecosystem inside the metaverse, and then I'm going to collect, you know, bitcoins. Meanwhile, out in the real ecosystem, it doesn't matter anymore to me.
Yeah, it's wild. It's a mind trip for sure to think about all of the different facets of the modern society and how we can explore ourselves in things that don't matter at all, but they seem to matter so much. And I think that there's a place for all of that, you know, but I know for me, I think that your ego, like you were saying, I loved how you said that, something like the autonomy, like being dropped into your autonomy is so important. And when you get connected with whatever it is in the ecosystem that calls you mm-hmm. and helps you feel as if you're some small part of this bigger, grander thing. It's yes, it's autonomous and it makes you feel small, but also important. And I think that that's where you get the light, the shadow and the light side of all things, you know? And yeah, the ego gets a bad rap for all the things that it can do that are destructive. But like you were saying, it does have a protective mechanism. And I love that we're so multifaceted as humans that we can, if we are given an opportunity and we take it, mm-hmm. we can sit with both of those as like a paradox, you know, and see them coincide in their opposite but equal roles in our own psychological experience, because we do need our egos, but we also need to be so unattached from the outcomes. And, you know, if we can do that, often the most successful people that are actually happy in their success are really, they're honestly detached from some kind of outcome. They're in the flow of the purpose that they have. They're like purpose-driven people. And mm-hmm. I think that that's what keeps me, purpose.
Yeah, like the opposite of purpose is like, you know, on accident.
Yeah.
Sound good. We're down at the Dillsboro Art Center. Here, you want
I might ask you a question, Bob. The heck this picture is all about?
No, I just copied it from someplace else.
In Virginia, do you really believe that looks like the sky that we have around here?
Is that a paint by number?
Oh, no, we're not deck each month. So I'm the weather guy. Can everybody see the slides okay? Dana, you're going to be my test guy. Can you see this stuff all right? Oh, okay. All right. And Bob Maddenly, stand up, Bob, professional photographer from Rising Sun. And Virginia Kramer, professional artist. Oh, maybe not professional. from where? What's your Farmer's Retreat. Okay, sounds good. Okay, we're going to start off with something to do with art. And so we're talking about art and photography, but there's another kind of art as well. So let's take a look at it.
What the farm?
Oh, come on. It's all right.
Yo, wake the farm up.
Catch up time. Catch up time. Yep, by the dog and power for the making way alone. Under the same sun. Catch up time. All that weight that you carry on. with the loving. Here's a towel, watch it now. So love it in the light. Jump station hot dog, hot prick, come up, watch me walking down. You might think that I'm a little small fry in town, but been there before. Beyond me, I adore nature on the floor. The sidewalk's cracking, yo, come no more. You're gonna need that flip up and you're gonna get that book out and it's gonna always the way. Come on, what's up? You know, we're having some incredible conversations with some amazing people and just creating random bits of amazing, like, synchronistic, you know, flows, connecting with the nature, yo. Connect up with it. Tell us what you think it's got to say through you. What's it coming through? What's coming through today? What's fresh? That's what we's in. We's in. We's in it again. Come on. Oh, thanks.
Bob's going to review some of his photos. I originally had on here that Bob would look at f-stops and apertures, and Bob looked at me and said, we don't do that anymore. Everything's pretty good. I just got to tell it what I want it to do. So he's going to talk a little bit about Photoshop. He said that's where he really puts his artwork to good use. Virginia is going to show some of her landscapes. La-la. Not that one. That's my daughter's. But a whole bunch back here. And then she's going to describe each one of those briefly to you. And then we're going to have a test. Not actually a test. I'm going to give out little pieces of paper, and you're going to draw your favorite weather event that you like, that you can draw.
That's what I'm talking about. Wake the farm up, yo.
Okay. So how do artists and photographers portray the weather? Well, you see it every day. Now, for the last 3 weeks, you haven't seen much except cloudy. I mean, totally cloudy. So it was pretty cloudy. You see it in artwork. You see it in backdrops of a lot of works. I've seen works that before and after the volcano Krakatoa back in whatever year that was, 1600, the skies changed in different artworks because of the addition of particles in the atmosphere. It was changing the colors and textures of the atmosphere. You see it also as very fleeting. The wind blows, and you go, oh, I got to get out and take a picture of that rainbow, and you get out, and it's gone. It's gone. So you got to, and that's where Virginia's work is a little nicer. She can take that picture in her mind and maybe then still be able to draw it or paint it, okay? Sunshine, rain, snowstorms, lightning, tornadoes, they're all kind of, you know, very quick sometimes, unless you're in the middle of a hurricane. So how can these phenomena be captured? And is there symbology in weather, art, and photos? Rainbows, what do they usually mean? La, la. Remember that song? Rainbows, rummy drops, and maybe some of you don't remember. It was about 64, wasn't it? That's something. Fog, confusion, and mystery. You know, you get a little of that. Snow, pain, harshness, death. Clean, and coldness. And I'm going to show you pictures of all this stuff. Some I took and some I didn't. Lightning, you know, that's wow, flashes of, you know, lightning just can, you know, give you a lot of electricity in your brain and just, you know, give you ideas, and also God coming down on you. How many of us have ever heard somebody say, if this is wrong, then let God strike me down? So, you know, it's your, you know, Hagar, the horrible, yeah. So tornadoes, and how can these phenomena be captured then in these different media, okay? I got to aim somewhere with this thing. There we go. Oh, I went the wrong way.
I think it's a newer word, kind of formed maybe from saunter and wander, but it's okay. It's kind of defined as the realization that each random passerby is living a life as vivid and as complex as your own.
Mm-hmm. So it's like the thought of that. It's like the realization in your own mind of that.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of like, you know, I just felt that word come up because of what we were talking about, and like that, you know, balance of ego, feeling like your autonomy, and that balance of feeling like in that autonomy, you have this purpose that's something bigger than yourself because you're in this connection and we're all one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, with that saunter, you know, when you see a random passerby, you know, like for, you know, it's that feeling, you know, where you might just like appear as like that extra character in their movie that's like leaning against the wall, sipping a cup of coffee, waiting for your bagel to be toasted or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just yeah. That's all they might see you in their vivid and complex life, you know, as they pass by.
Right. I love thinking about that. That's why I love to people watch. I don't get to do it as much as I did when I lived in the city, but when I was in college and when Justin and I were going through school together, we worked downtown in Indianapolis and we shared a car. So we had to sit and wait on each other, whether it was from, you know, getting out of class or getting done working at the hotel or whatever it was. And so we would have lots of time to just sit and wait. And so I had a lot of time to just watch people, and I didn't have words. Like I didn't have, like you're saying, the vocabulary to fit that feeling. Mm-hmm. But I remember sitting and watching people and feeling that, like imagining that maybe they glance at me, maybe they don't, doesn't matter. I'm still like that filler that extra in their movie that stars them.
Yeah.
That is their life, and that there's so many complex stories, and yet somehow feeling super connected to all of it at the same time, even though I'm not, I'm just like a little me, you know. And the narrative part of the story, it's just, it's not about me, but I'm there still. And so, yeah, I really love that word. I'm gonna have to look that up. That's cool.
Yeah, I love, like, even thinking, you know me, I like to think even beyond our human egos too, and just even think about how, like, I could be walking in the city and there might be a pigeon standing on the sidewalk and it looks up at me with like a hunk of hot dog hanging out of its mouth or something. And, you know, right. It's like, I'm just like a passerby in this like complex, like vivid life that's right there, like foraging somebody's hot dog chunk that fell off and nesting in these like cliffs of like glass and concrete and, you know, creating their whole life there. And, you know, based off the living ecosystem that's existing there with all of its, you know, all of its folds and curls and cycles and warmths and colds.
Sure. Yeah, it's really cool to think about that. I think that is what is so appealing about animism for humans.
Animism.
Because, well, it's like the belief that everything has its own existence. I'm not a scholar on it or anything, but the whole idea is that, you know, the tree is a thing that has a life, or the rock, or like you said, the pigeon. And so, like, there's a animistic view of the world is so appealing because it brings meaning, but it also makes things so, it's like a level playing field at that point, you know? Like, if the tree also has a life, then how could you elevate yourself above the tree? You know, from an egoic perspective. And I don't know, there's something really cool and appealing about that idea to me.
Mm-hmm.
I read this book by Sophia Strand. It's called The Divine. Oh, what is it called? I think I sent it to you actually. It's about the divine masculine, but she goes through the stories of like Dionysus, and she's trying to rewrite the perspectives that people have on what the divine masculine is, and like the patriarchal stories that have been told don't have to be the way that we continue to tell them, is essentially where she goes with the stories. And such a great book. It's called The Flowering Wand by Sophia Strand.
Cool.
And she talks about breaking down those hyper heroes tale stories and making them mean something different for our modern time. And so it just makes me think of like the animistic version of Dionysus and how, you know, he lived with the animals and he was the god of wine and sex and love and all of these things. But what did that really mean during the time that it was written, and what can it mean for us now?
Right.
And I think a lot of it has to do with living are breaking away from our current status quo, like you were talking about earlier, like with your daughter thinking about you as this like magical elf who doesn't do the 9-to-5 thing and, you know, kind of rebels against that, and seeing these two opposing worlds coincide and live parallel to each other. And I think that a lot of people are trying to break away from that, but they don't know how, because we don't have good myths around it, you know? We don't have good stories to tell that show us a way through it. Mm-hmm. And she talks about that. Thanks. Really cool. It's a really cool concept.
Yeah. I think a lot of you know, we live in forests that have never existed right now. There's, you know, trees from all over the planet that live in the Eastern hardwood forest here in the United States. You know, there's Asiatic plants, there's African plants, there's European plants, there's even South American plants. And, you know, there's, you know, so many different, I want to say to you Aussies, there is some Aussie plants that grow here too. But there's like, when this is happening, that's like exterior. It's what we observe outside of ourselves. And, you know, when you catch up a little bit into a certain sense and put yourself into the flow of the ecosystem, we're living in mental health places, you know, environments of interchanges between species and existence of the life in the forests around us that have never existed. So we're getting into these places in our heads that are never existed. And I sometimes think we get confused. We're like, maybe that's not supposed to be there, but nature put it there, right? It's like these different Asiatic plants coming to America. Yeah. It's like nature put it there, and it's there because of our mental health state and what we're creating into our heads now and what we're, you know, like it's almost like this globalized forest in some ways, but it's yet it still has its own unique place because the new forests that are in Washington state are totally different than the new forests that are here. There are strong pockets of the remnants of old growth, you know, of what is, and those should definitely be like, you know, held sacred and protected and like,
for sure,
you know, observed and like, you know, species that are, you know, fragile. Like it's our human stewardship to want to protect and, you know, encourage that.
Definitely.
But the, you know, creating genocide in the world on people is also creating genocide. We're doing it on plants. We're doing it, you know, to our own mental thoughts, you know, that, you know, we have mental thoughts that are naturally wanting to grow just like the Japanese honeysuckle is. And there's ways to harvest it for medicine. There's ways to prune it so it doesn't hurt the other tree. There's ways for goats to eat it and turn it into soil. There's just so much beauty there. There's not radiation coming from it. There's not toxic chemicals coming from it. Why? Like, so like our sick mental health space thinks that that's what we need to do to create the forest and put our ego onto what we think it is. And that's my, that's been my challenge to the greater community right now is like, as we're mindfully stewarding, are we allowing ourselves to be stewarded as well? Because like maybe here on my place, the creature that's at the top of the chain actually stewarding me and all the other creatures here is like a, you know, some cute king, queen, flying squirrel team that, you know, jumps around in the trees and, you know, checks everything out, makes sure everybody's got what they need to be happy to do what they're doing. I don't know, you know, it's like, maybe it's a tree, maybe it's a, you know, definitely something beyond the borders that we create.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, well, I think you're describing a couple of things from my perspective. One of them is the as within, so without concept, you know, like what's going on around you reflect as a direct reflection of what's going on inside of the human psyche. And as stewards of this planet and of this existence that we're all in, we manifest things on the outside of us that reflect our inner psychology and our inner workings and even our spirituality, you know? And so you don't have good narratives that transcend the dominate and control perspectives that we've been using for a really long time now. You do see that trying to, you know, tear things down and eradicate what is seemingly out of the ordinary or not supposed to be there or whatever. And so I think that there's a lot of people in very various ways trying to transcend that. And almost like you were describing, what you were describing to me was like an alchemization of these things rather than a dominance of them. Mm-hmm. What can we utilize them for? They're not taking away from us. What are they here for? If they're, you know, and that's, that goes to also represent what's going on in our own minds and in our own hearts and our own psychology. The things present themselves. They're not always supposed to be acted upon, but why are they there? Mm-hmm. What's going on inside of you that came up? And I think that you and I were talking last winter about, you know, how hard winter can be because you have to slow down and, you know, things come up and make you feel down. And sometimes it's so important to, instead of trying to medicate that or run away from it or whatever, just to sit with that and see what is coming through and why. And maybe you won't know consciously, but somewhere, some way it'll reveal itself to you in the right timing. And I think that, you know, like you were saying, plants are the same way. Like, they didn't just happen to grow there for no reason. You know, they were supported by the earth to grow there. So what can we do to alchemize that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, son. Do you want any cookies? Would you like any cookies? I made some fresh cookies.
Diabetic.
Don't forget to eat your oatmeal, though. Yeah, the green oatmeal. They're dripping with the honey sauce. You know, just like you like it. Huh, son?
So, now we'll get into a little meteorology. Where do we live? We live in what's called the mid-latitudes. We're at about 38 degrees here. Did I do it again? I hold these microphones. So we live in the mid-latitudes between about 30 and 60 degrees. I like living here because this is where the action is. It's where there's a big interchange of energy between the north and the south, you know, down at the equator. So that's why I like this area here. And there we are right there, Dillsboro. So that little star there. What kind of weather do we have here in Indiana? We have four seasons. Yay. Let's move to Florida and have the same season all the time. And golf all the time. How many people golf in here? No golfers. I love you all. So, and we have a moist continental atmosphere here. Okay. The weather here is moist and continental. Continental means it's always over the land because we're in Indiana, but it's moist because of the Gulf of Mexico, bringing all that moisture up. Okay. That's what's going on out there right now. We have warm to cool summers, cold winters, and it's variable over those mid-latitudes from southwest to northeast. Okay. Think of Nevada and Arizona, dry climates out there, and then up in the eastern United States, northeast, quite different. So that makes differences in rainfall. And of course, you got a lot of other things affecting it too, altitude and heights. So what's severe weather? Severe weather is dangerous meteorological, cause social disruptions. It can cause damage, loss of life, loss of electricity, which is why some of us have, you know, little generators that'll run one light bulb for a couple hours. So, and it depends on, and this isn't just severe weather, this is all weather. It depends on your latitude, which we just talked about. We're at about 38 degrees here in this area, okay? North of the equator. So we're not south, we're north. It depends on altitude. I didn't say attitude, I said altitude. Altitude, you know, the elevation. We're sitting at around 880 feet above sea level here, which is not very high, but you get into the Appalachian Mountains, you know, you get up 3,000-4,000 feet. And if you've ever gone into the Smoky Mountains, you know, as you go up, the climate changes because now you get into forests that are quite different than the forest we have here in this area. The topography itself, you know, valleys and mountains, okay, will cause different kinds of effects. And then the atmospheric conditions, we'll talk a little bit about that, not much. So let's talk about the difference between weather and climate. How many of you asked the question, Dora, were you having climate change? Okay, what are you talking about? Do you know what climate is?
That's what I'm talking about. Farm, wake the farm up, yo.
I love that. I really love that thought.
Like that, I just want to drop that symbiotic word in there. Like, I love how, like the, like how can we alchemize that? Like, brings in like a active role in, you know, it goes all ways. You know, it takes, you know, like in lichen, you know, it has the algae and the mushroom growing together in a symbiotic relationship, and it takes both of them showing up, right? And then they're liking it. And
so
it's easy to not feel in the flow if you're not participating in the flow, that, you know, that glow, that feeling of something that glows for you. And if you go for it, you're going to feel good, and the ecosystem's going to see that and feel it. And it's like a whole nother pivot even sometimes, you know. It's like when you're in a deep conflict, that's when it's like hard, you know, when you have to go and sit with these things. But when you go and can sit with it and feel it, like go into your underworld and you know, feel what the mycelium's doing with all this stuff under there, and then feel the glow and grow towards it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, we were talking earlier about the conflict is what, you know, builds you up resilience. And I think that it's no different when you look at the world and the state of things and even your own experience. And, you know, you have to experience conflict. It shows you what you're made of. It points you in the direction of what needs to be worked on or what needs to be released. And that symbiosis that you're speaking of, it really is being able to look around and know that you are a small part of a bigger thing. And what can you do to play your role so that other things can do their job and pick up where you cannot. And so I love that. I love that thought also. It's really powerful. And it's definitely been a life lesson, a life theme in my experience of. And what's so cool when you were describing that is how, you know, I didn't always think about things this way. I grew up in a very like average Christian perspective. You know, I didn't know any of these things, but it was like, once you're exposed to a piece of that, it feels easeful. It feels possible, even when you're met with the massive resistance of the way that things work, you know, but there's something so attractive about it, even if it's such a foreign idea, the very first time you're exposed to it. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people going back to come forward. They're relearning things that would have been lost if they wouldn't have decided to, you know, just plant a garden or learn to bake bread from scratch and start sourdough and drink kombucha. And, you know, there's so many different examples of these concepts of people trying to bring it back down to being in the flow of existing as a person and not trying to dominate this existence out of itself almost.
Mm-hmm. I like all those things you described are all like human dances that we do with natural things, you know, to bring them into our lives, like, you know, making a kombucha, you know, you're creating a little microclimate for this to cultivate and turn into something that we can drink that tastes good. And, you know, it's like nature's moving through us one way or the other, you know, breathing it in, eating it. When we can dance with, you know, parts of it, you know, make an herbal preparation, make a tea, make a, you know, a spot to sit in nature, you know, like all these things, you know, interacting with it, we're touching it, we're smelling it, you know, it's an interactive experience. Like sometimes for me, if I feel really out of the flow, and I say this a lot, but I like to sniff moss, and you know, it's just like you blast your head with a bunch of oxygen, and then all of a sudden, like the little patterns even of looking at them, like kind of get your brain going, and then you just kind of know what to do, and the momentum takes over you from there.
Right. I know we've over prescribed ourselves with all of these things that we think are supposed to help things, whether it's, you know, mental stuff or just whatever it is. And there's so much power in the simplistic experience of looking around and putting your feet on the ground. You don't have to have a scientific study to feel the impact of that truly.
Wake the farm up.
So weather, today's weather is like today's news. You pick up a newspaper, you read it. Okay, that's the weather today. Climate is like more like picking up a history book, okay? So it's more like an accumulation of data that gives you averages and norms and, you know, high levels and low levels of different temperatures and wind speeds and all that stuff. You still with me, Dana? All right, cool. So wait till I get to the parabolic equations. I'm kidding. I just made that up. That sounded like something off Star Trek, didn't it? So Noah has some names for some of these severe weather events because they have to give a classification so they can figure out what to tell people to do. So heavy snow, blizzards. Blizzards is not during a snowstorm. Blizzards are blowing snow. Okay. It may not even be snowing, but you can still have a blizzard. Okay. Freezing rain, or as we like to call some of them, sneet, which is snow and rain together, or sleazel, you know, which is sleet and drizzle at the same time. There's some really cool names.
I say high winds, flash floods, water spouts. I've never seen a water spout. I'd like to see some of those down in the Gulf. You guys have seen some? Cool. You got any pictures? I'll throw them in. Oh, okay. Thunderstorms, hail, tornadoes, tropical storms, hurricanes. There's a difference between tropical storms and hurricanes, and most of you know the difference between them. It's the wind speed within the hurricane itself. You know, once it hits like 130 miles an hour, oh, it's a hurricane now. Oh, it's only 120. We're good to go. So tell my greenhouses that. And dust storms. We don't have too many dust storms around here, but you can have dust storms if you're in other parts of the mid-latitudes and other parts of the world. This is good stuff for art and photos. These gray skies out here right now are like dismal. I'm tired of you. I've been playing on our little Alexa machine at home. I say, play any songs you know about sunshine. And there's a whole bunch of them. Sunny, thank you for, and you know, those kind of songs.
You look, I'm so proud of you. No, you're such a sweet one.
Oh, thank you. Anytime.
But baby, you know, you labeled your hat. You're labeling everything in that room, huh? Did you label the room? You know what? You know what I say about labeling things? You gotta start with the room, son. And if you don't start with the room, you're gonna have to label yourself not having any cookies on Wednesday. That's right. And after school, you're gonna come home and you're gonna do my laundry. All right, son? Here, do you want some applesauce?
I don't know how to do laundry.
Well, you better learn.
We'll do it for you, Joe. Hey, how you doing, buddy? Just came in from the astral plane. That's right.
So good.
So, where do we have our weather? Right down here in the bottom called the troposphere. It's the bottom 10 kilometers. So if you're going up to about 10 kilometers is called the troposphere. And these are just temperature profiles showing the temperatures decreasing as you go up until you hit that tropopause. And then it starts going up instead of down. I said up, but I meant down. So you can see it decreases. And again, it's just to give you a little flavor that, you know, we don't just measure the wind speed, wind direction, all that stuff down here, because that wouldn't tell us anything. It's three-dimensional, okay? So, scales of motion in the atmosphere. How big is it? How long does it last? And why do we care about different scales of motion? Because if we know what's going on a larger scale, it's going to give us a little more indication of what's going on right here, where we live, okay? So we're going to look at planetary scale, synoptic scale, macro scale, okay? And that little girl's holding the whole Earth up. I thought that was kind of cool. So planetary scale, we got sunshine coming straight from the sun, okay? And they're parallel rays coming with each other. And they hit the Earth, and here at the equator, this is 1 square meter. You know how many people know what a meter is?
It's about that big.
Okay, so 1 square meter of energy is about 2 kilocalories per square meter per second. Okay, and if it comes in here at the equator and hits an equator that's a flat plane also, you get that much energy. But that same square meter of energy up here spreads out because it's tilted away. Okay, if you remember any of your trigonometry or anything or geometry, you know that if it's at an angle, it's going to be a bigger area, and so it doesn't get as much sunshine, as much energy. So that means we got more energy here than we do here. So what's that do? It causes this kind of stuff. Okay, the Earth is getting more energy here. So how many people have ever boiled a pot of water? So I'm going to show of hands. Okay, good. So as you're boiling that, what happens? The bubbles form at the bottom, and they start rising to the top, and they set up a little circulation system. That same little circulation system's going on right here at the equator. And so at the equator, whenever you see a photograph of the Earth, you'll see a little girdle of clouds around the equator because of that activity, bringing that moisture and that heat up. Heat rises. Okay. You guys remember that from physics in grade school, right? So, did you have physics in grade school? I don't know. So down here, you got more energy coming in from up there. So, what happens when you have cold air? How many of you people, again, this is the exercise part. How many people have a refrigerator? Okay, everybody's got a refrigerator. And you go out there in the middle of the night, and you're hungry, and your spouse, friend, whoever's in bed with you says, what are you doing out there? He says, oh, I'm getting something to eat. I'm hungry. It's 3 a.m. So open the refrigerator. What do you feel? Cold air coming down on your feet, okay? Because cold air sinks, okay? It sinks. And so if you got warm air going in this in the top and cold air coming in the bottom, guess what? You just set up a little wind circulation system in your kitchen while you're getting your tuna fish and crackers, okay? So that's how the wind is set up. Now, we got one other thing that affects that. The world turns. So because the world turns, we get some other weird effects. And I'm going to give you one name. This is going to be on the test later. Coriolis effect, okay? So we won't talk any more about that. It's on the test. Synoptic scale. Synoptic scale, they named that after years and years and years. During World War II, they finally said, you know what? We need to nationalize the weather service because, you know, you got this weather service that's collecting the data at 10 o'clock in the morning and this one at 2 in the afternoon and this one at 3:30 and that one at 4:22. And nobody was doing it all at the same time. And so how do you get a picture of what the weather looks like if everybody's doing their measurements at different times? So they, to get a synopsis of the weather, they said, let's do it all at the same time. Let's do it at 5 till the hour, everywhere, all the time, every hour of the day. And so that's how they started getting the same weather data across the whole United States. And back in the 40s and 50s and even the 60s, we were taking that data and putting it hand-drawn on maps and then teletyping those maps to other people to figure out what's going on. Where's the high pressure systems? Where's the low pressure systems? Where's the cold fronts? Where's the warm fronts? And all that stuff. Of course, now we got computers do all that, you know, number crunching. So it works out pretty good. So anyway, this is a cold front right here. Cold front means there's cold air behind it pushing down into Texas. This is a warm front here, the little half bubbles, half moons. And it's got warm air behind it pushing north up that way. Okay. Just give you an idea of which way these things move and where they go. So this, I just thought I'd give you these. I thought they were cool looking figures. So cold front, you got a cold air mass. Cold air is what? Heavier or lighter than warm air? Heavier. So it's pushing under the warm air. And so you get these nice cumulonimbus clouds building up in front of it. So usually when you got a cold front going through, boom, it goes through. About 2 hours later, sky is clear. It's nice. It's colder. But the rain has moved out. The other thing, though, if you got a warm air mass moving over the top of cold air, it can't get under it. And so it kind of just smears it out. And that's what we've been having here the last several days, weeks, or whatever, why the roof is leaking in our house. So, because I just can't get up there and get it fixed. Right. So, anyway, that's it'll rain for days and days and days when you got warm air moving over. Okay. Mesoscale, we've done planetary and synoptic. Mesoscales is about the size of the Cincinnati area. We are within the mesoscale reach of Cincinnati. So, you know, you'd look at several hundred kilometers, miles, if you like miles. Okay, so here's some different phenomena that take place on the mesoscale. So flow near a ridge, urban heat island. Okay, when you're in an urban area, it actually is warmer than the surrounding rural areas because of all the pavement, a lot more fuel being burned and all that kind of stuff. And then here's another mesoscale event in the atmosphere, a huge thunderstorm building up. And we're going to look at the dynamics of a thunderstorm. You're going, what? We're going to look at the dynamics? Yeah, just a couple pictures. So, okay, this is back to you now. Pop quiz, oral part. Name some weather events that you like. Or that you don't like. Ricky, I'm going to call. I know everybody's names. I can call everybody. What? You're going to call them. Yes, sir. All right, hurricanes. What? Hurricanes. Okay, we get a lot of those here. Sorry? Do we get a lot of those here? Not here. Okay. That's why we like them, right? Dan, where are you? Oh, there you are.
What kind do I lie?
Yeah, and what kind? Just name a weather event.
Tornadoes.
Okay, tornadoes. Anybody got any more in the back? Catherine? That's Catherine Tall and Carl back there. Spring, rain showers. What kind?
Spring.
Spring. I thought you said green. I thought, oh, you and Rebecca ought to talk. Wait till you see the sky and her artwork. So, anybody else got any? Bob?
About vacations.
Vacations? It doesn't matter if it's rain or anything. Yeah. Cincinnati Zoo. I don't know your name. Brett. We've met before.
Snow days.
Yeah. Snow. Okay, so I just threw a couple more up here that I rain and hailstorms and hail, snow, freezing rain, sleet, hurricanes, tornadoes. You guys got all those. Fog. You're going to like the last one. You're going to go, what? Oh, not that one. Sciroccos, Chinook ferns. Okay. Hot winds. Very good. Dan got it. He nailed it. Those are hot winds. Okay, the one, what we have here in the U.S. normally is Chinooks on the backside of the Rockies, the eastern side of the Rockies. Mary and I, when we lived in Fort Collins, we could have 8 or 10 inches of snow. And if all of a sudden we got that hot wind coming down over the mountain, it can melt that 8 inches in about 40 minutes. I mean, it was unbelievable. In the Far East, you know, like around Israel and Palestine and all that, they have more what are called the Sciroccos, hot wind, and it kind of can kick up the sand and turn into a sandstorm then. So a fin is the same thing, except it's in Germany or French Alps or something like that. It's just different names for the same thing.
The actual farm. Wake the farm up.
That's right. So how do you see the weather? What's your number one indicator of what the weather's like? Who said go outside? Go outside. Why? Because you have built into you a thermometer, and you can test the wind. You can do that, or you can just face the wind. And if you face the wind and it's coming this way, the low pressure system's on your left. Always remember that. So, just for fun. So your body's. You know, and when I give a little talk to kindergartners, I act this all out. So I'm a sleeping guy. I get up. I open the window. Oh man, it's cold. Yeah. So because they know it. They can test the temperature. So, okay, how else do we see it? We can see how much of sunshine there is, cloudiness, sunshine. Does everybody remember that? temperature, wind speed and direction, amount of rain or snow, maybe. I don't have my rain gauges out right now because they freeze and then they crack because they're all glass. Is that it? Nope. Let's look at some harbingers of weather. Harbingers, the bad guys. Okay, different types of clouds. So here's different types of clouds. Here's some right here, too. My daughter drew this for me for my birthday about 2 or 3 years ago. She's a pretty good artist, and so she drew all these different kinds of cloud types, cumulonimbus, and that's the same as these cumulonimbus here. So cumulus are kind of the ones that are closer to the ground. Right now, we've had a lot of stratocumulus just for a week or two now. If it wasn't stratocumulus and raining, it was -4, 10 degrees or something. So we didn't have much choice here over the last month. So different kinds of clouds can tell you what's going to happen with weather. I think I got a few of Bob's photographs coming up, so he might have to jump in here. And there's one now.
Bob, tell him about what you got.
Well, this was taken down. Did I do that? Okay, this was taken down just south of Aurora on the Ohio River one summer afternoon, obviously, and just the cumulus clouds were really built up that day. Wasn't storming underneath them because you can see layers of clouds further on to the south would be the direction there, but it just looked beautiful. That's all, yeah. Okay. This, I don't exactly know what it is. It looks like a giant mushroom. And you can see off further on, there's another one. And there's another one that's down below the trees. I've seen this a couple times. This was taken from Red Wolf Sanctuary out back of Rising Sun down on their prairie lot or whatever that was. But
And I really find that fascinating because I took an intentional break off of social media for a little bit back in October. And it wasn't like I was spending an exorbitant amount of time on there, but it was, I just felt in my inner spirit, if you will, that I needed to unclog my system, I guess. And for me, that meant just turning it all off for a little while. And so I did that. And at first I was really bored, like annoyed because I was annoyed with how bored I was. I was like, I wasn't even using this that much, but I went to grab it so many times.
Yeah.
And I, you know, of course, like journaled about that and worked through it. But it was like week two when I realized that I was getting in touch with my creativity. I was noticing, you know, the birds outside more, and I wasn't looking down for that, that hit of dopamine, I guess. I was looking out and observing what was happening around me a lot more. And I was telling this to one of my close friends at the park last week. And she was like, same. She was describing that she had just done this. She was on like week two of her like time off of screens, and she took a complete screen break. So like computer, everything. And she was like, I didn't realize how much I wasn't paying attention to the world around me and the simple things that actually mean so much. And, you know, we think of the winter as being this dull space in time where it's gray and there's not a lot of color. But if you're paying attention, there's still a lot to see. But there's so much more color on your phone or on your TV that a lot of us just ignore it. And it's not to make us feel worse. And that's not why I'm saying that. But I'm just saying it was really cool to also share that experience with a friend who I didn't know was going through that. And she had the exact same experience, just taking a walk outside and realizing, wow, like I wasn't paying attention to the world around me much as I should have been.
So you guys were able to give each other a thumbs up.
Yeah, we were like, yeah, we made ourselves feel better.
Yeah, in real life person, like a little blue thumb. Exactly. Up, a little smurf thumb.
Yeah, we gave each other a like.
I like.
We gave each other heart. Yeah. No, it was really cool though. It was really cool to like talk about that because I don't know, I have a hard time with technology, but I love it as a tool. And so I'm trying to find its place in my life instead of me trying to find my way through it. Mm-hmm. In a way that it feels dominating for me, because it does. It definitely feels like it's taken over things in a negative way. And I don't always want to think about it like that. So I have to take, you know, my own accountability there.
Swell, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wake the farm up. I hope y'all having a good time and you've made it this far in this show. This is some brilliant stuff, isn't it? I hope you're enjoying a face-free show. There's no video, you know, so you can enjoy knitting or cleaning or doing some cooking or playing blocks with the kids. Come on, let's go. Let's have a good time. Whatever you want to do. Working on the farm.
Rainbows. So we're going to talk about some different things. Rainbows. What are they? What are they in art or photography? They can be signs of happiness, kind of frivolity. I'm going to go find that pot of gold. So I asked I didn't ask her, but she just made this for me. My granddaughter drew me a rainbow. And she got the colors in the right order. Everybody knows the colors, right? Roy G. Biv. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
I think this is probably three photos stitched together. Maybe not. I don't know. Depending on the lens I had at the time. But, yeah, that was in the evening, and the sun was setting. You can see the rainbow itself is maybe a little bit more on the red or orange side. You don't see the green too much in it. But, yeah, that was an interesting evening.
Are you labeling things, Joe?
That's the room.
Yeah.
The room's labeled.
I'm so proud of you, son. You labeled the room. You must really want some cookies on Tuesday, huh? I might even give you some milk. If you know what I mean.
We want milk. Can we have some milk? label that, Joe.
Hey, ease up, guys. That Joe, he's just, you know, trying to make sure he's organized and getting everything lined up. It's a big year, 2024.
Yeah, so let's be nice to him.
Okay, all the elves are gonna show up into Joe's room. We know where it is now. It's labeled. And we're gonna go and help label everything. Every little thing. We're gonna even put it on iNaturalist. Each thing. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Let's do it.
Yeah, okay. I'm really happy. Let's do that, elves. Let's go.
Yeah, here we go.
Well, son, you have some really great friends. I thought elves made shoes and cookies and stuff, and I thought, you know, they were just trying to get some of my cookie recipes. Are they not into making cookies, just eating them? What's up?
Not quite sure. I've never seen them eat. They always smell like blood, though.
What kind of blood?
They smell like it.
Do they eat roots? Are you into eating roots now, Joe? Son.
Yes.
Son.
The only way to live.
You know what I've said about eating roots.
But you know I got wrath. But I'm out here on my own path.
Don't go to sleep out in the rain. You got places to stay. And if you got a little time, help me put up some hay. Make it when the sun shines. So you're gonna have to stay when it ain't raining no more. But if you do, I'd love that. So come on down and help out. There's plenty of earth chores. There's chores everywhere beyond the boundaries. The boundaries of our souls. We just gotta dial in our autonomy into the greater ecosystem, our role. And no matter what they say, they'll try to turn you another way. Try to get you to subscribe to some other thing and tell you it's a better, better, better day. Until they charge you the toll and say they only gave you 3 months free. So now for the rest of your life, you're gonna have to pay the fucking fee. So go get on the computer. Download your fucking apps. It'll tell you when to eat, to sleep, and when you can take a nap. Ha! And that's a wrap.
Do that again, Hawk. Or Woodpecker.
Red belly.
Stealing my thunder for later. So, rainbows and art. I got online. There's a lot of stuff on weather in art. So this was one picture that it really just hit me because you have it's called the blind girl. And they're resting after a rainstorm has gone by. And there's that double rainbow right there. But you can see that there's a contrast here. And they talk the artist... I didn't talk to him. He's not been around for a while. But they had a little write-up on this particular artwork. And they said, you know, this contrasts what the experiences are. The young girl, you know, she's looking over there going, wow, peace. And she's wandering, looking at that double rainbow going, wow, cool. And the other girl really can't see it, but she's still content. She's got the warm sunshine on her face. So just thought I'd put that in there. And there's my permission. You see what it says? Used without permission. So. These are called mammatus clouds. They're usually a sign of some storms coming later. Mary will tell you about what mammatus means later. So, but you can kind of tell what they look like. So, this is a little bit on cumulus clouds. So, my grandmother, whenever she would hear it thundering outside, she would say, "Donnerwetter nach himmel." And I think it just means thunder weather, very bad. And she would get scared, start lighting candles and saying Hail Marys and stuff. So, and anyway, this is kind of, and I think this is kind of what Bob had in that one picture. It's the anvil. He had just from a different angle of it shearing off the top because it shears off the top. And then you got this overshooting tip. So, and this is up probably at around 40,000 feet above the ground, these guys. So then you got the wall cloud down here, and this just gives a little dynamics. We're not going to worry about that. So, oh, and that symbol right there is the symbol of a thunderstorm. So sometime when we're over here for an art gallery show, I'll wear my meteorology tie and I'll show you, it's got about 100 different symbols on it for different kinds of things. So, this is not art, but to me it's art. This is from a WSR Weather Service radar 57, which have been around since the 40s, and they're still using them. And the intensity of the signal gives you an intensity of the rain that's going. So these reds and purples it's really coming. It's coming down. And I have a picture to go with this. This is what the actual wall cloud actually looked like that was coming. I didn't take this. Okay, a friend of mine took this one. But look at that cloud. Can you imagine being on this road, driving into that? I'd be going the other way, maybe. I don't know. But pretty tremendous cloud coming there. This one speaks for itself.
We want you to think just like this lasagna. This lasagna, Joe. Would you like some? Hey, easy now.
Wait, do I still get to put labels? Just want to label everything.
Yeah, why do we got to... What? Make sure you spell correctly, though, okay?
Okay.
He's doing just fine, Joe's mom. We love Joe's mom, though. We just sent some elves over to her house to help make cookies.
I heard that. I heard that come through your ears. Are you talking to somebody else right now, Joe?
No.
Are you like one of those techie kids that have like all these things and like you label them and then you know how they work?
No. Why would I do that?
What? You're such a good son. I'm so proud of you. You're just moving my mouth. Get it off. Don't label my mouth. I don't need that label. I need to be able to breathe. Can you spare me? Is it okay? You're going to label my chin. You like my chin, Joe?
Propaganda and marketing is always funny when you look up somebody's website, right? But there's this company called Wyze Phones.
Okay.
And these Wyze Phones are, you know, I guess just really simple phones. They have the cool, sleek look of a modern phone or whatever, but they I don't think they go on the internet. I don't think they, you know, they just do some of the basic things that you'd want a phone to do, like, you know, calculator and call people kind of thing. I don't even know if you can text from it. You'll have to look that up. Wyze Phone. I'm actually typing it in right now just to see. They're pre-ordering them right now.
Okay, so they're not out yet.
Yeah, I guess there's Wyze Phone 2, so maybe they have their first one out. Maybe the next one's better. I don't know who these people are, what their intentions are, but I think their intention is to help people to be able to have phones without getting so lost in them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real thing, right? I mean, we're all actually experiencing that. It's not something that we're being dramatic about. It's a real thing. It's addictive.
I guess there's like some kind of maybe I'm not sure. I can't say for sure exactly. I'm reading the instruction manual now. I like this. It says without constant ads and notifications, Wyze OS can help you be more deliberate and mindful about the content you consume and the time you spend on your device, leading to healthier digital habits and better overall well-being. And I think that's pretty cool. It's like, it's, you know, like you said, it's a tool, and this comes with a tool to help you balance your use of the tool, I guess you could say.
Right.
I do want to say, like, what you're doing and what a lot of people can do without having to like buy a product or something is what you're doing. And I think that's coming from your real natural self. And that's probably even more empowering, honestly. I think it's good. They're thinking about, you know, some of these kinds of things and the, you know, what's happened to culture since people have really gone into these little rectangles.
It's weird, huh? I mean, I'm sure you're a little bit older than me, so I'm sure you can see it even more, but I mean, I'm 30, I'll be 35 this year, and I remember what life was like before we had instant access to everybody and everything, and it was, you know, there's so many valuable things that have come from it. You know, there's valuable aspects of that, but there's something to be said about that autonomy thing that you brought up earlier, honestly, because I think we all have forgotten that what it was like to walk out your door and just be by yourself and not feel like you're connected to this huge amount of people and input all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened with the phones being what they are. You know, they started out, you know, you could have them in your car, and then, you know, they were so expensive, so most of us couldn't have them. And then all of a sudden they were everywhere, and they became little computers in our hands that connected us to everything that we could possibly imagine. And I know that we'll figure it out eventually, or we won't, but I think that on an individual level, it's really important to take accountability and really be super honest with yourself about what it does for you, because I think it does different things for everybody. I think there are some common themes for sure, but not everyone is as deeply affected. And then some people like me, I don't need to be connected to all of those things all of the time. I don't have a fast-paced job where I need to have my email, you know, around me all the time. But I think that someone like that may benefit from this phone, the Wyze phone thing you're talking about, mm-hmm. because it would put it into perspective, you know, how much time they're actually spending on their email. You would have to go to your computer to sit down and actually open your email to make the time, rather than it just being in the in-between moments of your day. And I think that we've forgotten that. And that's, it's not to make us feel bad that I'm saying that. I'm just saying, like, I think that we've just been, it's like the frog in the pot deal.
Okay, a little bit on just how do we get this weather data? This is a typical weather station. This one's in Haines, Alaska. You got your anemometer and your wind vane up there. Anemometer measures wind speed. Okay, then you got some other instruments down here. I'm not going to go into all these. You can have a little 10-meter tower. Most of the weather stations have them at 10 meters, which is 33.2 feet, I think, something like that. And this is one that actually we installed, we being my company I used to work for, because we have a group that does nothing but installations, out on the Uinta Reservation in Utah. They had hired them to do a survey of all different kind of plant life there, because somebody wanted to come in and put all these gasification wells in. And they said, no, we don't want you on the res. But EPA said, oh, you got to at least give them. And so they found tons of plants out there that shouldn't have been messed with. And so no fracking going on their reservation. So anyway, so I actually have a 10-foot one of these at my house. It's in the barn right now that I want to get reset up. But it's about 10-year-old technology. I need a new thing to download the data. So thing. Data downloader, data logger. So I just want to show this one because this is an experiment I was working on with another guy at Colorado State. This is your anemometer. It's just a little propeller anemometer. It just has a little propeller that goes around. And then it also has vanes in two different directions. So it would give you wind direction both in this way, the horizontal, as well as the vertical. So it'd give you a little differences there. And I want to show you my 1964 Ford Falcon van that we drove everywhere in Colorado with our American flag curtains in the windows. And there's another type of wind indicator that you can check anytime you want. So, but if they're near a building, don't believe the way the wind's blowing, because the building will influence where the wind is blowing. It's got to be out in the open someplace.
You're talking about flags.
So where do we collect meteorology? At all these places in the U.S. So we're sitting right in here. So if I can find the Ohio River Valley. So we've got, yeah, there's four or five stations around here. The biggest one, of course, is at the airport. And the biggest upper air station is in Wilmington, Ohio. There's not as many of those, only about 100 or so. But all this data is collected every hour and put into a central computer system in Kansas City. And so we can get pictures of the atmosphere, you know, pretty good, pretty quick.
Wake the farm up!
Okay, this is a Vincent van Gogh called Reaper with Wheatfield and Sun. I thought it was interesting. He made his sky green. That was very interesting. And so I put down a few things that I thought it showed. You know, work. It was very aesthetic and a little intense. And you know, you hardly even notice the farmer they're harvesting until you look for him. Why do you think that sky is green? because it's Vincent Van Gogh. So we're going to jump to this millennia, 2009, because now people are doing artwork on their phones, iPads, and this one I thought was really interesting. Rain on a studio window. He just did this on his iPad. This guy's still around. I thought he was pretty interesting. So, and that to me does says contemplation.
Like this one was over in Richmond, Indiana, and there had been a pretty good storm that it came in, and a couple of us actually wound up getting in an underpass and painting. And this is the field I seen after the storm had went through, but it was still kind of rainy. And I just loved the field and everything.
I can.
Is it the switch done? Oh, that helps. Well, we'll start with that one. I think I really have it clamped in there,
oh,
though.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well, yes. We won't move it.
Okay, this one was down on the Ohio River in Mount Vernon. And in April, early morning, and I just loved watching the towboats just working the barges and everything going back and forth. But the sky was just, you know, had all these oranges. And so that's what just really drew me to it. And it helps the contrast of the buildings. So let's see what else I wrote. and just picking up the colors of the sky in the water. And but just making all the hills in the background, trying to make them look like they're going back also. So the softness that's in the morning light too. Well, thank you.
You know, it is funny, you know, in this conversation, I don't know if I told you, maybe you know, but I started a YouTube channel a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, it kind of came from people asking me to have it, you know, on YouTube and to be able to have some video content. People want to see what's going on at the live shows. I know the last couple of years, my intention was to create an audio show because, I don't know, I like listening to music while doing other things and not looking at the screen. But
yeah,
I know a lot of people, they stream things even if they're not looking at it on YouTube, so wanted to make that available. But yeah, I think even part of it, like the video aspect of it to me is like very interesting, because I guess I am trying to encourage people to remember what we're talking about. And you know, I feel like it could be a step, you know, when you're listening to something that's inspiring you in that direction and, you know, you're not looking at a screen, you're able to be looking around and feeling your own environment, like seeing out your mm-hmm. window and see what tree is like right out there. Or,
right.
You know, maybe there's not a tree right out there, but maybe there's a bird, or maybe there's a, you know, whatever it is, it could be a wall with some moss and lichen on it for all I know.
Mm-hmm.
But nature's right. around you, and, you know, just like being able to look at it instead of your screen while listening to this show is ultimately what I was ideally like kind of going for, you know, with the podcast. But,
yeah.
You know, trying to, you know, open those doors more to share it and, you know, see what it naturally wants to do and not stress out about it on the way.
Yeah, I don't think there's any stress about it at all. I think it's really cool to have, you know, access to your face and to the vibe of what you're doing. And I don't think that there's any absolutes with that. You know, I don't think that it's all bad or all good. I just think we all need to take back our own sense of responsibility for ourselves and the way that it's impacting our lives. And that takes honesty, and in my opinion, it takes taking a step back and really evaluating what it looks like for you. Because, I mean, it's easy. It's easy to get complacent and numb to what effects it's actually having on you and the people that you love and the relationships that you value with yourself and others. So, you know, I know for me, I like to look at it like a tool. It's a tool. So if I want to watch a video, I'm thinking about that. You know, what's my purpose? What's the reason I'm doing this? Is it for entertainment? That's fine. I'm not going to make myself feel bad about that. But I'm just trying to be honest what it is, why it is I'm using the screens, or why it is I'm carrying the phone or whatever. I don't have to be super spiritual about it. You know, it just is what it is. I'm living in this life with this massive amount of information in my pocket. So how am I going to be responsible for it? And where am I going to place it every single time I pick it up?
Mm-hmm. And keeping focuses and flows and keeping connected.
It's
a tool. Mm-hmm. It's a tool.
It's a really great tool. I think there's been a lot of benefit for a lot of people through having access to so many different ideas. Like, you know, some of the things we've talked about, like learning about ecosystems and how everything works in symbiosis. And, you know, all of these things, they weren't as accessible just 10 years ago as they are now. And they are growing. And I think people getting access to them is a huge part of that, a huge reason why. And finding your communities and finding people with like minds. And so it's been so inspiring in many, many, many ways. So I'm not against it. I just think that, like I said, being really honest about the role that it plays in your life and the balancing of it all, because it can steal your flow. It can steal your creativity. You can take on other people's creativity and forget your own. So, you know, we all have our own talents and gifts. Don't want to waste it.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing and recording with me for the last half hour or so. Like, people have been loving it. Like, this is amazing. Like, you're so special to me here in the Elves here. We love you. Drea Starr. Everybody give a shout out.
I love you. I love you too. To capture it like that.
I was telling him one eve night, I was coming up 50 and right where there's a ridge when you come up from Aurora, and it's dark, and my headlights kept hitting something. I could see something off the side of the road. I'm like, what is that? And it's lightning. And then all of a sudden I could see swirls. It was a small tornado, but it was a tornado coming up the ridge, and I'm driving right in that direction. I did not know which way to go. I just floored it. And it must have jumped. But there's my tornado.
Thank you, Virginia. You know, so I'll have it out sometime when I get it out. I don't have any kind of boss telling me I have to have it out next Tuesday or anything like that. Nobody's paying me to do it yet. Just nature. You know, nature gives me some wild mushrooms or something like that once in a while for doing the show. And herbs and things like that from the forest, you know. So check those things out. You know, that's what this show is sponsored by, the Wake the Farm Up recordings anyway. Thanks for Dillsboro Art Center here. I'd love to connect with you guys more and, you know, turn the recording off.
Our new creator space. We hope it was a surprise. We're really proud of it. And we're very proud that we have people like Virginia and George and Bob that are willing to come in here and do this for us. This is part of our Tuesdays at Arts series. It's going to be every Tuesday, every month, 6 o'clock. We'll have something going on. First Tuesday is music. Come and bring in an instrument or sing a song. Second Tuesday is the writers group. They're always open to new members. Third Tuesday is life drawing. And we had 7 degrees outside and 8 people here drawing last two or three weeks ago. Fourth Tuesday is what we call 5 minutes at the mic. Come in, talk about something for 5 minutes. George can't do that.
So. Whoa. Give him like six slots there.
But we had a good time with that. We had several people who wanted to come in and talk about history, talk about your family, read a poem, tell a story, whatever you want to do. It's your turn for 5 minutes. And then this is the fifth Tuesday surprise. There are fifth Tuesdays this year, so the next one's coming up in a couple months. We'll have some other surprise. So, well, we're just trying to make it happen here. That's all it's about, all what it's about. Again, thank you to George and Bob and Virginia for sharing with us. Thank you for coming in. Sign the book on your way out. We want to know that you've been here. Take a look. This is a preview of our next show. The show doesn't actually open until Saturday, but you can sneak in there and look around at the artworks in there and just stick with us because we're going to make a splash in 2024. I keep saying that. We're going to do some great things. So hang out with us anytime you can. There you go.
And if you have an idea for one of those things, yeah.
You like my Chinjo? Check out my Chinjo. Chinjo, 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 Chinjo.
We love Chinjo. Yeah, Chinjo's the shit.
Yeah, Chinjo is the shit. I can hear the elves. They do like me, huh?
They do like you.
Wow. Wow. Son, I'm so proud of you and your friends. You guys are doing really good things. I hope you get everything labeled tonight just right. I think I'm gonna go and, like, you know, hang out in my garden naked and pick some rutabagas or something, okay, baby? I'll still make you a pie on Tuesday if you want it, like you said, okay? So,
all right.
Yeah, feel good? You feel good now?
Feels good.
All right.
Yep. I'm in there.
Yeah, don't forget to drink water.
Mm-mm.
Do you remember how to spell? Do you remember?
S-P-L-L-L.
How do you spell cup?
C-P-U.
I think you're holding it upside down. Oh, where did it go? I think you were... Oh, what's this? C-U-P.
Soggy day. I'm having a boggy day. It's okay, cause a day's a day. I'm happy to be here, hey. Even if it's a bottom of the bottom day, I'm here with me. I'll climb up a tree and I'll see what the bottom might be. Down in the roots, roots are deep. There is nothing that I can't keep. My everything's twined with worms and vines. Soggy bottom, hey. My face is all wet from the tears I cry from all the people I've known.
You should do an exercise, Joe.
Let's work out. Let's go. Ha.
Boom. Cha-cha.
Cha-cha.
I'll snap video of chipmunks doing weird maneuvers.
That's what you're visualizing.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Chipmunks doing exercises.
This is your great grandmother.
Oh, hey, great grandma.
How are you, Joe?
Better now.
I just came through this organic creature that's called Elf. What? How did I get here, Joe? I like how you're labeling things these days. You know, we all need labels. We all need labels.
I was inspired by you. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here now. I wouldn't have been there then either.
We're here for you. We're here for you, Joe. We're here with you. We're here with you all the time. And we want you. We want you to remember that we are with you. And to also remember you are the one who is here right now. You're the one that's doing it. You're the one that's doing it. You're the one that's doing it, Joe.